All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, Week 9 edition of the show here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. We've got a 6-2 football team here in our happy little town for only the third time that they've been playing football here for, what, 45 seasons of Bucks football. And after the Monday night win in New York, which is the first time they've ever won in that stadium and only the second time I think they've ever won anywhere in the Meadowlands, the old stadium or the new stadium. And after that win now, that put the Bucks at 6-2, we've got a record matched only by two of the most memorable seasons in team history, 1979, that first Bucks playoff team that went to the NFC Championship was 6-2 en route to a 10-6 record, and then the 2002 Buccaneers, who of course won the Super Bowl and were 6-2 en route to a 12-4 regular season record. Then there's these guys, who are 6-2 now, despite having played pretty much what I think was their second worst game of the year. I mean, if you look at the eight games so far, the first game of them all, the Saints game, was a bad game. I think the Bears game, even though they lost that game as their other loss, they played better than they played against the Giants, and they just left a lot of opportunities on the table and should have won that game, whereas the other night they should have lost the game and then were lucky to be playing an inferior Giants team, lucky to get a couple of calls, we'll talk about that as well, and not lucky, but to their credit, able to capitalize when they had a chance to, and they're lucky to have Ryan Succop, the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week, who made all four of his field goals, lucky to win kicking four field goals, because I don't care if you make them or miss them, if you attempt four field goals in a game, that's usually a recipe for losing the football game. They did not score enough touchdowns, but they did get the win. So we will talk about all of these things today. Of course, we're going to look ahead to Sunday night, 8:20 p.m., Sunday night football, which is like the thing. Like Monday night football used to be the big thing, and it's still a big thing. But now that it's on ESPN instead of network on ABC, and now that NBC does Sunday night football, over the past 10 years, I think Sunday night football has become like the premier primetime game between Monday, Sunday, and Thursday. And the Bucks will get to showcase on that after they lost that opportunity when they were going to play on Sunday night against the Raiders a few weeks ago, and then COVID happened and all that. So here we are. And a little extra wrinkle to this one is that the weather could be, depending on Tropical Storm Ada, you know, which is not necessarily, it's far enough out where we don't know what's going on yet, but it weather from that could influence things. Sunday night could be windy, winds up as much as 20, 25 miles an hour, could be rainy, we'll know more in the next couple days. But anyway, don't worry about that right now, we'll get to all of it on the show today. As always, if you want to contact me, I love hearing from you guys, here's how to do it. Email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's just BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And the same thing on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. You can get a hold of me that way if you got something you want to have on the show. Future shows, of course, since I'm recording this one. And if you've got something you want to say to me, cushion, discussion, whatever it is, love hearing from you. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, our good friends over there. Or if you're looking for an automobile of any kind, whether it's pre-owned or whether it's brand new, or whatever it is, I strongly encourage you to at least check out the website, BillCurryFord.com. They spell it C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can see all the inventory there. You can go down to the showroom in person, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry on the east side of the road, just north of Hillsboro. Check everything out there. Or if you are not comfortable with COVID and everything going on, they will bring the cars to you. Like, just tell them what you like. They'll actually deliver the car to your home or office for a test drive, and if you buy it, they'll deliver it for that as well. You get all that. You get the nationwide lifetime warranty. As long as you own the car you bought from there, you can bring it back in if there's engine trouble. All these things, you get the unlimited 10 years roadside assistance. You get the oil changes for the first year comped. Just take them into the service center. All those things and more involved. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. Or go see him in person, my good friend Sean Sullivan, the GM over there. So we'll start with the Monday night game, and then we'll get to Sunday night coming up against the Saints, because I wanted to talk about a few things involved in the Giants game. First of all, good for us for being a glamorous national team now. That was the most watched Week 8 Monday night football game since 2015, so that's cool, I guess. The Bucks didn't exactly put their best foot forward, mind you, but they did at least win the football game, and they got it done under the lights of primetime. So that was cool. Now, let's talk about how things unfolded just to start the game off. Bucks were clicking. All right, they had opening drive, the red jerseys and the pewter pants for the first time since the uniform switch back to normalcy looked fantastic. You know, we hadn't seen the red jerseys yet this year. That was beautiful. The Bucks started moving the ball down the field, stalled and kicked a field goal, but early returns in the game on Monday night were good. It's like, okay, you know, we can move the ball on these guys. It'll be fine, what have you. So a lot like the Bears game, which was also in primetime on a Thursday night a few weeks back, this game kind of kept going on and on and on through the first half, and it felt like the Bucks were just basically kicking their ass, and the scoreboard didn't indicate it. And they weren't getting much done on offense. I know on Twitter there was a lot of complaining about Byron Leftwich and the play calling. The insistence on running the ball on first down, which was very heavy in the early part of the game when the Bucks were trying to quote-unquote establish the run. Let me talk about that for a second because, you know, it's one thing when you see it and you're watching the game and you're kind of getting impressions from that, but you need to wait and kind of let everything come out in the wash and look at the final numbers. Because I do it too. I'm a fan. I try to be somebody who looks at things analytically, especially because I do a show like this. But I'm always I'll always be a Bucks fan first. I'm a fan. That's what I am. So after the umpteenth run on first down where we get 2 yards or something and it's second and eight, and it just feels like the Bucks are donating it down, I'm screaming at the TV, oh my God, Byron Leftwich, for the love of all holy, just please throw the ball more on first down. After the game was over, here's how it broke down. They had 31 plays that were first downs, okay? They ran the ball on 13 of them. They passed it on 18 of them. Now, that's a little too high for the run. You should not run on more than about 30% of first downs, but you have to take extrapolations. You got to use the cross tabs, you know, you have to take out. So first of all, toward the end of the game, once they had the lead, you don't want to count those. And there was a few times they ran on first down toward the end when you would expect that they would, as they're trying to control clock, salt the thing away, and they almost didn't do that. But anyway, those I'll waive a little bit. But even if you just take into account neutral situations where they could run or pass, and the situation didn't necessarily dictate run or pass, they ran on first down early a lot. It got a lot better in the second half, to Byron Leftwich's credit. And so, you know, when you look at the overall totals, it's still too much, I think. But I do like how Byron Leftwich at least adjusted and got away from it. Throwing on first down went really well for them when they ran on, or when they threw on first down. They were 14 of those 18 times they threw on first down. 14 of 18, 164 yards, counting a pass interference call, 2 touchdowns. And if you look at play action, which they used both on first down and other downs, that was wildly successful as well. Brady was 10 of 11. This is play action only. Brady was 10 of 11, 110 yards and 2 touchdowns there. So, and you don't need the play, you don't need the run to set up the play action. Like, I know some people are thinking, oh, well, you run on first down, so the next time you do play action, they bite. That is no correlation. We've already been through that on this show, and it's well known that there is no correlation either with how often you run or how effectively you run and how effective that play action is. None, okay? It's just literally the hand motion of faking that handoff, and linebackers and safeties, they have to, they go through keys. They're looking at low hat, high hat. They see a pulling guard. They have to respect it. It doesn't matter if you just have no running attack whatsoever. They're going to hesitate a second. Play action works no matter what your running game is like. So anyway, my point is, Byron Leftwich overall, you know, needs to throw the ball more on first down and stop donating downs on the 13 first down runs total. And this counts all of them, even the ones at the end of the game. They ran for 30 yards. So do the math, that's a little over 2 yards a carry. That's less than 2.5 yards a carry. So I mean, again, you're just hamstringing your offense 2nd and 9, 2nd and 7, 2nd and 8. Those 2 or 3 yards are better than an incompletion, but only by a little bit. But they're not worth it to forego the opportunity for a big chunk of yardage, which you get by throwing on first down, which the Bucks did, as we said, they had 10 yards per attempt. Not just per completion, but per attempt, going 10 of 11. That was the play action numbers. 14 of 18, like I said, on first down. 164 yards. So it's a little less than 10 yards per attempt, but still close to that. It's over 9 yards per attempt. So I mean, you know, that's what they ought to be looking for more often. Now, to Byron Leftwich, which is credit, and John Ledyard, who writes for, I believe it's Pewter Report. I'm going to make my attributions correct. He did a little breakdown. He wrote an article about this, which I appreciated. And overall this season, it wouldn't seem like it again, but they ran the numbers on it. Byron Leftwich and the Bucks offense, they are top 10 in the NFL in passing rate in situations considered to be neutral. So what do I mean by neutral? In other words, not when the situation automatically dictates it. So we're not counting third and 12 when everybody's going to pass, but on first and second downs only, and not in the final 2 minutes of a half, and not in games that are blowouts either way where the outcome's already been determined. That's the criteria here. The Bucks are tied for fifth as far as how often they pass in those situations on first and second down. So that's a good thing. They also, and this is another big mistake you see offensive coordinators make, and more information has come to light about this, second and long. The old conventional wisdom was, okay, it's second and long. Yeah, we could throw, but hey, what if we run a draw or something? Because they think we're going to throw, right? So let's run a draw. I'll bet we can run underneath them for a big chunk of yardage. No, the worst play in football is running on second and long. It sets up third and longs, and third and longs are a recipe for punts. So the Bucks run on second and long, the fifth least of any team in the NFL. So I just wanted to address all this on the show today, mainly because I know what it's like to be a fan. I know a lot of people are looking at this offense, and I was looking at it Monday night and thinking, you know, my God, like, we ought to have more points by now. These field goals are hurting us. The game really should have been a runaway from the start, and the Bucks kept the Giants in it by failing to score touchdowns and by putting themselves behind the chains in a lot of situations, and it just felt bad. Overall, Byron Leftwich has not done a poor job of play calling. I think there's way, and it's not just the runs, it's the type of runs too. So I do think there's things they need to adjust. I thought they didn't do themselves any favors running into the teeth of the A-gaps of the Giants, who actually have good defensive tackles, despite not being a good team overall. So there's some things you could change about how you run the ball, not just when. But overall, Byron Leftwich has not done a bad job, and he definitely did a better job in the second half on Monday night as opposed to early in the game. I want to see the Bucks get more aggressive, though, early on Sunday night. And again, the weather may end up dictating this. I'm not sure what it's going to be like yet, but that was one of the big things I took away from watching the game and then going back and looking at the overall numbers after I had watched the game. And then you look at Ryan Succop, who, hats off to him, because the Bucks needed him at every single point he scored, you know, all four of those field goals, and he gets the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week for it. And that's the Meadowlands, folks. I mean, that was a windy night outdoors. That's not an easy place to kick. So to see him go 4 for 4, hats off. And this is where we point out that Ryan Succop was picked up as a free agent that anybody could have had and is doing just as effective of a job as any of the drafted kickers. In fact, a much better job than any of the drafted kickers the Bucks have tried out. So it helps to have a guy like that you can rely on when you need to. You would prefer the Bucks don't play so many other games where they do have to rely on the kicker that much, and they shouldn't have had to rely on him so much on Monday night. But a great job by him. And, oh, the officiating. We have to mention when we get helped out, okay, because we always complain when there's something that we feel slighted about. But on both of the Bucks touchdowns in the second half, looking at when they scored their touchdowns, the first one, when they were down 14-9 and they scored the go-ahead touchdown to make it 15-14, that was the one to Gronkowski over the middle for 3 yards, and then they missed the two-point conversion afterward. Brady, the play before that, missed on a pass to Jaden Mickens, and there was a penalty called on Bradbury for pass interference, which I thought was extremely shaky. It looked totally fine to me, like that whole, both of them, the guys had kind of had their hands up a little bit and were maybe a little bit of hand fighting, but I would have been really upset if that call goes against us. That was ended up being a 14-yard penalty, set the Bucks up first and goal at the 3, and they scored a play later. That wasn't even the worst one, though, because pass interference can be bang-bang, and you know, they're very subjective. Later on, after the Giants had retaken the lead 17-15, this is when the Bucks scored to go ahead 22-17, and they had just hit Tyler Johnson for 20 yards to get into Giants territory. Then the next play, they hit Cameron Brate for another 25-yard. Big gain for Brate. Then they call a penalty on the Giants on the defender for lowering the head to initiate contact. And they basically just saw two helmets hit against each other and decided, well, that must be a penalty on the defender. And if you saw the replay, and again, I know we have the benefit of replay, whereas they don't on a play like this, but the defender is just squared up in the athletic position looking to make a tackle. Brait lowers his head and drills into the defender, and they call the defender for a helmet contact. Just an atrocious call. And that set the Bucs up. They'd have been first and 10 from the 42. Even with the 25-yard gain, they would have been down there at the 17. But that penalty ends up putting them on the 8-yard line, and they hit Mike Evans for a touchdown on the very next play to go ahead 22-17. These are potentially game-changing calls. We don't know that the Bucs wouldn't have scored without either of those two calls, but we don't know that they would have. And then, of course, the final play of the game, the two-point conversion attempt by the Giants after they came back to score, make it 25-23, and needed a two-pointer to tie it. I didn't have a problem with that call being picked up. You know, you don't... It's not an easy call. Watching it in slow motion instant replay, which again, they can't do on a call like that. Watching it in slow motion instant replay, Antoine Winfield puts his helmet and his body on the defender before the ball is there. It probably should have been pass interference. Let's just be perfectly honest, okay? It's a bang-bang play again. Like, he got there in real time. It looks like it's almost simultaneous. It's kind of like the Malcolm Butler play was in the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Seahawks, when the Seahawks threw the interception on the goal line to Malcolm Butler. If you watch the slow-mo replay, that's pass interference. I mean, Malcolm Butler cuts the receiver off, drills him with the body before the ball's there, and catches the ball. It's a clear PI. But in real time, again, very, especially in the Super Bowl, very difficult call to make, and I can understand, same thing for the referees there. The only reason I'm bringing these things up is because, you know, we had the same thing with the Mike Evans PI in Oakland, or in Las Vegas, I should say, end up being a huge call in that game. So far through eight games, all I'm saying is we have no license to complain about officiating. We're probably net one win, maybe a half win. I don't think it's more than that, but we're probably plus. We are plus in the wins-losses column to do with officiating. There's no question about that. And there's eight more games. We might lose a game on an atrocious call at some point down the line here, but when we do, we'll all go completely crazy, and we need to look back and remember that, you know, we've caught some breaks so far. People say all that stuff evens out. It doesn't necessarily even out. There might be years where you get completely just hosed by officiating throughout the year, and there might be years where you have a good year with it. It doesn't necessarily even out at all. It's just random, which is different than things evening out. But I wanted to mention it. The offensive line, wanted to mention them because every week that they play well, they deserve some mention. Ali Marpet played every snap, but he is still in concussion protocol this week. Not sure exactly how or when it happened, but right now, and this is I'm recording this on Thursday morning, so I haven't seen the injury reports for today. But as of yesterday, he's in the protocol. He could be cleared. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's very, very possible he does not play on Sunday night, and the Bucs would have to look to either Joe Haig or maybe A.Q. Shipley or someone to fill in at the left guard spot there. Same thing with Chris Godwin. He had the finger thing. He was out this past week. That's why you saw so much of Mickens. I don't know if he's going to be back. Bruce Arians has been kind of coy about it, and they're hoping he can play. But again, it's just hard to say right now. Those are the two main injury things. Vernon Golston's on the COVID list, not because he has it, but because of exposure. But they think he can be good to play by the time Sunday night rolls around. And then, of course, we got one other addition, Antonio Brown, who wasn't an injury but is now eligible to play. So let's take a look at the matchup for Sunday because, like I just said, we don't know about Godwin yet. That's going to make a big difference, obviously, with the receiving core. But let's say Godwin doesn't play and it's kind of a straight-up deal with now Antonio Brown, I guess, is Chris Godwin for this game, I would think. You know, people are saying, how much is he going to play? He hasn't played yet, hasn't learned the offense, on and on and on. First of all, let me say something right now. I'm going to talk about Antonio Brown just strictly football with him. I said my piece last week. You know, I remember what a controversy it was when the Bucs drafted Jameis Winston because of his off-field problems. Quarterback is different. It's a face of the franchise type thing, whereas other positions are just a guy on the roster. But the dilemma, for those of you that feel like there's a dilemma in rooting for someone like that or not, and believe me, I'm not judging you, But I said my piece on it last show. You know, I wish we didn't have to always make these moral decisions just to watch our football team. But either way, point is, I'm keeping it to just football when I talk about Antonio Brown as far as my analysis and stuff like that. So, you got Marshawn Lattimore, first of all. He'll be on Mike Evans. Marshawn Lattimore's their top cover guy. He has not been good this year. And, you know, the first game obviously didn't go well for the Bucs. But overall, for the season, Lattimore, and since that day, he's had a tough year. 26, this is the numbers of receivers against him, 26 catches, 370 yards. He's given up 4 touchdowns. He's got no official pass breakups, although you can break up a pass without breaking up a pass, of course, but not officially. He doesn't have any. He's only got 1 pick. He's had a handful of pass interferences, including in the opener against the Buccaneers. And so, I mean, this is one reason why the Saints' pass defense is not necessarily their strength. They haven't had a good year there. Their red zone defense is not very good. In fact, I think it's, yeah, it is number 32 in red zone defense. The Bucs are number 3 in red zone offense, and the only team to have scored a touchdown in every and goal situation this year. They didn't score in the red zone every time the other night. That's just inside the 20, but and goal, anytime they've had first and goal, they've scored a touchdown every time. Only team to do that. And Mike Evans is a big reason for that red zone offense being as good as it is because of what he's capable of doing inside of 10 yards in the end zone, where you just throw these balls up and he goes and makes a play. So that's going to be a matchup. And Evans is healthy now, and things that have bothered him don't appear to be bothering him anymore physically. So that's something where the Bucs can definitely exploit. If you have Godwin and Brown, all the better. But if Brown takes on the role of Godwin and you still have Scottie Miller, I don't think you're going to see Mickens as prominently. You shouldn't see Mickens as prominently as you did on Monday night. And then you get to the tight ends, of course, too, with Brate and Gronkowski. You know, this is a game where the Bucs have a chance to throw it around the yard a little bit, the weather notwithstanding. And that's something, again, that we don't know for sure how it's going to be by Sunday night. Although looking at some of the forecasts, and the actual core of Ada, the what could possibly be a tropical storm in the area, if that were to even happen, wouldn't be till Monday, I think. I think Sunday night, but you still get some winds and stuff, and things will be up. The forecast right now, as of Thursday, says winds 20 miles an hour, 60% chance of rain. We're still 3 days out, so it's hard to say what it'll be like at that point. But, you know, that could have an effect on the passing game and things like that. We'll see. But as far as looking at the matchup, it's not a bad one for the Buccaneers in any way, and I actually like their chances here. Tom Brady has never, in all of his years as a quarterback, ever lost to the same divisional foe twice in a season. Literally never, which I know it's the AFC East he was playing in with 3 mediocre other teams all those years, but I mean, never lost twice to the Dolphins, never lost twice to the Jets, of course, and never lost twice to the Bills. Has never happened. So he's got an L already against the Saints. This will be the first time to lose to the same opponent twice in a year if it happens on Sunday night. But looking at the Bucs' effort, I said this to a couple people I was texting with on Monday night, because of the way things tend to regress to the mean in the NFL and the yo-yo effect, and how if it's all going well, usually that doesn't last long, and if it's not going that great, usually you're going to bounce back. Well, the Bucs, first of all, you have to get the win. They did. But the Bucs not looking all that great and kind of not playing one of their better games, I think bodes well for this weekend, whereas if they had gone and rolled the Giants, this is all stuff that's just kind of gut stuff, okay? But there are numbers that bear this out. Like, teams tend to play better off of poorer efforts, and they tend to play below expectation off of really good efforts. And that's, you know, something that has been historically not a bad marker to look at. So if nothing else, I think Monday night's effort puts the Bucs in a decent position to bounce forward on Sunday night, and they're going to need to against a Saints team that is still dangerous. I have not written the Saints off yet. It was really frustrating watching that game against the Bears that they played this past weekend and seeing how the Bears had chances to win that game and couldn't quite pull it off. It would have helped the Bucs out a lot in the NFC South. As it is, if you win this game and you've split with them, you know, I think the Bucs are a, I don't want to say a lock because they're not, but they're a heavy favorite to go on and win the NFC South. Whereas if you lose this game, one, you go a half game behind the Saints, but two, you've got no tiebreaker now, so it's really a game and a half behind the Saints. You'd have to make up two games on them the rest of the way. And that's still, I mean, I'm not saying if they don't win the game, they can't win the South. I'm saying if they do win the game, they're in really, really, really good shape to win the NFC South. Looking at some things I'd like to see more of as we get set for this game. First of all, at the running back position, because we have all this hype about our running backs. I think we talk about running backs way too much. You saw Ronald Jones the other night with a fumble after it wasn't a drop pass, but he caught a pass, turned around, fumbled it shortly thereafter, and there was a couple other hiccups trying to throw the ball to our running backs. I've maintained before on this show, running backs' most important role, especially with Tom Brady, is their help in the passing game, whether it's picking up blitzes or whether it's catching passes out of the backfield, being able to get some yards and things like that. I think we talk way too much about our running backs in terms of what they bring to the table in the running game and not enough about what they bring to the table in the passing game. I honestly believe, I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn, who you've seen a little bit of so far this year, he's flashed a couple things but hasn't played that much compared to Ronald Jones or Fournette or even McCoy. I honestly think he could do just as well, especially at catching passes. He could definitely do just as well as any of these other guys we have. And he's just a guy, he's a Jag. He's J-A-G, just another guy. He's a guy we drafted, but nothing like crazy or anything. Just put him in. I mean, what, you know, I think we spend way too much time, and even after the play on Monday night when Jones fumbled, and then Fournette kind of came in and took over after that, and that was a big hoopla, and, you know, the Bucs do make switches at running back after a couple of series. It's not like they don't do that, so I don't know if it was as punitive as maybe everybody was making it sound, but either way, who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? I bet you Keyshawn Vaughn, anybody who's just shifty in the open field can catch a ball. That's really what Tom Brady needs more than anything. I mean, I think Keyshawn Vaughn's probably the closest to James White and what he did for Brady in New England. Vaughn's probably the closest of anybody on our roster to that. So, you know, the focus to me would be more just, you know, who's helping out in that department and blitz pickup and all that stuff as well. But, you know, I don't know if the thinking there is different inside one Buccaneer place or not. I think a lot of unnecessary energy gets expanded on it. These pop-up ads on ESPN. Is there anything worse in the world? You hear that? Close. Intolerable. Anyway, looking at DVOA for the game on Monday night, Bucs are still number one despite the effort being less than their best. They had enough of a cushion in DVOA that even a game that was kind of lackluster wasn't going to drop them out of there. They still have the number one overall team DVOA, number one defense, first against the pass, third against the rush. Their offense is number six, passing offense, and number 14 rushing. The Saints, for their part, number seven in DVOA. And they're kind of evenly split, offense and defense. They're balanced, number seven in offensive DVOA, number eight in defensive DVOA. Of course, their run defense is much more formidable than their passing defense. And so there's no need for the Bucs to run right into the teeth of that. You know, just throw the ball around the yard a little bit. We'll see what happens. Of course, the weather is going to matter. And like we talked about, that's still kind of up in the air right now as far as Tropical Storm ETA, ETA, whatever you want to call it. We got to do better than the Greek letters, by the way. I know it's very rare to come down all the way through the alphabet. The way things have been going in the past few years, it has happened. But even when those years come along, we can't just come up with a second list of names, like a backup list of names. I hate having to call it Tropical Storm ETA or Alpha, Beta, Gamma, or what all these do. I actually like ETA better than ETA. And anyway, the ETA for ETA is sometime Monday-ish, if it's even going to come here, which who knows. It's not. It's a tropical storm. It's not going to be like a big deal or anything. But it could have some effects on the game. I don't think it'll be up here that soon. By Sunday night, it should still be further south. But again, it could throw some stuff this way and things like that. So, you know, it's just something to keep an eye on that could change strategy and things like that. Either way, it's Sunday night football. It's going to be exciting. We don't have any reason to believe this one will get pulled off of Sunday night football like some other ones have to this point. So it should be a fun weekend. Hey, it's Florida-Georgia week in college football. It doesn't feel the same as usual, but it is going to be an event and one of the bigger games in the SEC this year. So there's that. So no matter what you guys are all doing out there this year, or this weekend, I should say, you know, Got a chance now with the time change. Halloween's passed us to kind of level out the election. Well, it may not be over by this weekend, but it could be. And just kind of start looking ahead to leveling things out and putting our full attention on this 6-2 football team. Like I said, only the third time they've ever been this good by record in their franchise history of 45 years. And of course, we all hope the best is still in front of us. So with all that said, have a great weekend. Come down off the Halloween candy rush. Get ready for Sunday night. Get rested up. Could be a late one. Get some friends together in a socially distanced manner, of course, or whatever it is you want to do, but have some fun with it. And I'll talk to you guys next week. That's the Free Stretch. Thanks to the Joes. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford. I'll be back next week. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.